Hi, Henry Reinga here with Dr. Roy Clauser again. And now we're going to talk about what does it mean to be human, or in the words of philosophy, anthropology. So, you know, now for me, this has been one that, you know, I've come up with basic theories. I've read different, Watchmany has his theory, and I kind of like part of that. And I remember studying Hermann Doiwer when I was in, you know, and he sort of had this belief, I don't know if it was he or if it was a professor that's interpreted Hermann Doiwer, that, you know, essentially it's not helpful to be dualistic on body and soul. And dualistic means a clear differentiation. So I felt like a lot of the Doiwerians in the 1980s had sort of sleep of the soul, and the resurrection of the dead is how they, the ones that were in my college back then, they sort of didn't give. And I remember real quick a story on this. So doctor there, I won't mention his name, but he had said that he just believed that when somebody died, you know, their soul slept until the resurrection. They really didn't have much consciousness at all, and then the resurrection raised their body again. I remember that. But now what happened once is that one of them had his uncle was dying, and they had this out-of-body experience that this philosopher witnessed, to the point where Garrett was his name, left the body, hovered over the room next door, described what was being said, and then they brought him back to life, and then Garrett said that back to the philosopher. But then the philosopher checked his theory that maybe he just, like, he knew we were all praying, you know. And then it actually occurred again. The hovering occurred, and then they brought him back to life again. And then the philosopher said, he said one thing. There is no way he could have got what that one thing said. And you said this. And the philosopher, who was a complete sleepless soul monist, okay, in terms of anthropology, wrote on the board, I still picture it today, he said, it was on the board before he even started, it was called, he wrote, more dualism on epistemology, on anthropology than originally thought. He put that as the top, more dualism. Now, meaning that he's adjusted his position that there is maybe a conscious soul, and maybe the conscious soul actually exists with the Lord on the way to heaven, and it explains that about the experience. Okay, so that's like my first where that I started getting interested. Now, over the years as a pastor, I've prayed, and there's been people who've had these near-death experiences and all of that stuff that sort of made me start asking, you know, what is anthropology?
Well, I can give you a parallel story.
Okay, let's go for it. Okay,
a friend I made in seminary.
Okay,
an older man than myself, and he became a Baptist minister. He graduated from seminary, and he did not like the near-death experience stories. He thought they were all just nonsense.
Right,
they really annoyed him. So, some years went by, and he took a church way north in New York State, in Rome, New York.
Okay.
Quite a ways from where I live. And I called up one time to invite him and his wife to come visit us. And she said, if you want to see your friend again, you better get here fast. He's collapsed 3 times in the last 2 weeks. He's on oxygen. So I got in the car and drove up. And when I got to the bedside, his name is Cliff. He said, Cliff, you look terrible. He said, yeah, I know, I feel terrible too. He said, listen, I got to tell you something. He said, the last time that I collapsed, I had made Anne promise not to have them revive me.
Right.
His name's Anne. But she couldn't. She promised, but then she had him revive me anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
He says, damn if I didn't see that long tunnel that everybody talks about, the light at the end. I'm walking down the tunnel. And my friend George comes up and says, you got to go back, Cliff. It's not your time.
Mm.
And I said, George, what are you doing here? He says, I died last month. So now they revived me. And I said, Ann, call George up on the phone, will you? So she dials the number. And George's wife comes on and says, I'm sorry, George died last month. Now, a lot of people want to dismiss all the near-death experiences.
Yeah, yeah.
As, oxygen deprivation of the brain or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe some of them are.
Yeah.
I mean, this doesn't prove they're all genuine, but only one of them has to be genuine for it to be false, that we're nothing but physical brains.
Right,
and
right,
when
right.
we die, that's the end of us. And I'm impressed by that. I don't know how anybody's going to explain that one away.
Well, I always find that I call it the neighborhood electrician reality. Now, here's my little theory. So I have a theory.
Okay.
So here's my theory. Okay. So I grew up, my dad, a mechanic, and our cars broke down the most. Okay. So now, as I grew older in my first church, my neighbor is an electrician, and he was one on, he would always say things like, better be careful, that could create an electrical fire, create an electrical fire, and he would be, coming over and, be careful, that's going to create an electrical fire. Well, about a year later, smoke starting to build out of his house. His wife come right out, call the fire department. So I called the fire department. The fire department came over, put the fire out, and it's electrical fire. Okay. Now, I've never, been near something like that, electrical fire. Okay. But now, I always find that it's fascinating that philosophers sometimes get, I would call, special revelation of things philosophical that they have to account for.
That's right.
I mean, and with this philosopher at Dort College, where I learned philosophy,
yeah.
And he was a Dortian,
yeah.
Christian philosopher, he was so set on monism that yeah. our anthropology is only, yeah. Monistic. No. And even as Christianity, he interpreted Christianity to say that when you died, you slept, this soul slept, and then who would get the Uncle Garrett experience? But this, so other philosophers, and I find over the years, things, back to epistemology, theory of knowledge, and that you observe, and books may say this, or books, that, but you still experience yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I myself had such an experience, and I used to hold that view about soul sleep, and I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah. And in fact, that's not the view of the early church either, and
right.
apparently is not the view of the book of Revelation, which describes the souls of people who have died who are already in heaven
yeah.
and who are aware of what's going on earth and who pray to God on behalf of
right.
the saints, the believers that are still on earth. So I think the older view is the right one.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, specifically in epistemology, many people talk body, soul, spirit, heart. So how would you see, what's your take on, again, as a pastor and a minister and you're preaching and or minister in general or a chaplain, you start asking these questions
sure.
because you find that people experience things that give answers or glimmers of answers to some of these questions.
Yeah. I was interested in that very long time ago, and as for my senior thesis in seminary, I did a paper on the biblical uses of the word heart, soul, and spirit, and I read every occurrence of those terms in Hebrew and in Greek, and took the context into account to see how they were used.
Right.
And this is the conclusion I came out with. Heart is usually used for the central unity of the self.
Okay.
That's the self itself. Joey reduced the expression selfhood.
Selfhood.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's the self in its unity. So
okay.
there are all the capacities, inclinations, dispositions,
right.
temperament, and so
right.
on.
Okay.
So whereas we tend to divide things up into intellect, emotion, and will,
right.
the Bible writers see that all as in the heart. It's
the
all
entirety.
There. Yeah.
The wanter wants what the wanter
right.
wants and wants it.
Sure. So will is just the name for the heart's desires.
Yes.
And emotion for the heart's feelings.
Okay.
And intellect for the heart's knowledge.
Right.
Okay. So those aren't separate things. They are separate functions of different functions
right.
of the one thing.
So the heart is a thinker too.
Yes. And the spirit is used for the diversity rather than the unity.
Okay.
So one person has the spirit of peace, another person has
oh.
a troubled spirit, another person has the spirit of kindness. And
oh, okay.
That's the diverse gifts and mm-hmm. And then soul, the way the Bible writers use it, is used for the life of the body. It's the soul, the heart and spirit as embodied. And in their view, it's exactly the soul that does die. It's the body that dies.
Okay.
Now, in popular usage, popular Christian usage ever since the Middle Ages, they use soul for what the Bible writers use as heart.
Right, your soul.
The soul is what survives the body. But
right.
For Bible writers, the soul is the body.
And life-giving.
And it does die, yeah.
Yeah.
So the soul that sins shall die, for example.
Right, yeah. So you're saying, in your understanding, the heart does not die.
Yes.
And
it's not a dualism of functions, though. Now, that's what the philosophical dualisms were about.
Right.
There were certain functions of yours, like, for example, bodily functions and so on. They die and cease, but your rationality continues on.
Right.
That's really Plato.
Right.
In one of the dialogues, he says, maybe it's the case that because our minds are enough like the eternal truths, maybe they'll survive death and only our bodies will die.
Gotcha.
And he came up with a view that we'd be better off without bodies, and he called the body the prison house of the soul.
Yeah.
Now, that's not biblical.
No.
The biblical view is that there's nothing wrong with having a body. Bodily functions are not dismissed or degraded. And having a fully functioning body is part of fully being a human being.
Right.
And that the human being after death is not a full human being. Now, there may be some kind of other body, you know, temporal body that they have.
Right.
Temporary body, I would say, when they go to be with Christ until the second coming. But then they're at the resurrection, we all get the body we all want, the one that doesn't wear out and fall apart, the one that lasts forever. That's what we're looking for. Especially when you get old like me.
Yeah.
You're very keenly aware that you'd like to have that body tomorrow.
Well, you know, I mean, everybody has their theory. As you are in ministry, and, you know, like for me, I would say like the spirit and the heart, very similar. You know, because the Holy Spirit, the heart of God, the body, we experience our body, and someday we'll have a glorified body like Christ has. And then the soul relates to more of sort of our emotion, again, these are functions and whatnot. And again, there are several passages of the Bible that, you know, feel like, you know, like the soul, emotions, a soul is sort of like, there's an intelligence to the soul. I wonder, you know, again, those are all questions, and you know, we don't, unfortunately, the Bible does have different usages, and,
But it clearly does come out, there is a duality.
If there is.
If
at
it's
least
not a duality,
body-soul.
Dualism, something dies and something doesn't.
Yeah, I guess that's right. That's right.
And I think that the way to about that is not that the soul all along has been a separate thing from the body, and the body is just a shell that's discarded. That's not it. It's more like an amputation. A real part of you has been cut off and will be restored.
Right. That's good. Well, enjoy your topic now of anthropology, and I'm sure you will come up with some of your own theories, and you already have some of your theories, but this study, I'm sure, will give you even more encouragement in philosophy.
Hope so.